If you would open with me to Psalm 15. Psalm 15 starts with a couple of questions. O Lord, who may abide in your tent? Who may dwell on your holy hill? Now, those questions might seem rather odd. I mean, who couldn't abide in God's tent? Who couldn't dwell on his holy hill? It may seem strange to us to imagine that there would be any limits on that. Well, wouldn't God want anybody there? Well, the truth is, no, he doesn't. There are standards he has. And you can't just be with God, you can't be close to God, you can't dwell with God just because you decide you're going to. And there are a number of things that you see in the Bible that show there's even danger in trying to come too close to the Lord if you're not doing so properly. I think about passages like Numbers chapter 4. I was talking about the transporting of the tabernacle. And in Numbers 4:15, when Aaron and his sons have finished covering the holy objects and all the furnishings of the sanctuary when the camp is to set out, after that the sons of Kohath shall come to carry them, so that they will not touch the holy objects and die. These are the things in the tent of meeting which the sons of Kohath are to carry. And then it says in verse 20, they shall not go in to see the holy objects even for a moment or they will die. They couldn't touch those holy objects. They couldn't even look at them, not even just glance at them, or they die. And that's how special, how sacred those holy objects, like the ark and things like that were, that they couldn't be touched. You may remember that there was a man who touched the ark one time, Uzzah. He was trying to steady it. Evidently, it was going to slide off the cart or topple off the cart or whatever, and he put his hand on it. He was struck dead just like that because he touched the ark. There are standards when it comes to dealing with sacred things, with things that are acquainted with God or associated with God. And so it is relevant to ask the question, who may abide in your tent? Who may dwell on your holy hill? Because not everyone can. Now, we've seen that earlier in the Psalms. In Psalm 5 and verse 4, for you are not a God who takes pleasure in wickedness. No evil dwells with you. The boastful shall not stand before your eyes. You hate all who do iniquity and so forth. There are people who just can't be close to God because of their lies, their behavior, because the standards that God sets for closeness to him, they don't measure up to. There are several passages in the Bible that talk just like Psalm 15 does, that talk about how difficult it is to have this relationship with God. Psalm 24 does that. In Psalm 24 and verse 3, who may ascend into the hill of the Lord? And who may stand in his holy place? He who has clean hands and a pure heart, who has not lifted up his soul to falsehood and has not sworn deceitfully. There are standards. Not anybody, not just anybody, can come into God's presence. In Isaiah 33 and in verse 14, sinners in Zion are terrified, trembling has seized the godless. Who among us can live with the consuming fire? Who among us can live with continual burning? He who walks righteously and speaks with sincerity, he who rejects unjust gain and shakes his hand so that they hold no bribe, he who stops his ears from hearing about bloodshed and shuts his eyes from looking upon evil, he will dwell on the heights. His refuge will be the impregnable rock. So, it's not uncommon in the Bible to ask the question, who can be with the Lord, and to think through what the answer would be to that. Not everybody can and will enjoy being in the presence of God. You might even think about this. Think about the physical world, and think about how there were kind of gradations of closeness to God. You had the planet Earth itself. But on the whole planet, there was that special land of Israel in the Old Testament that was God's own possession that he put his people on. And then there was the city of Jerusalem that was God's special holy city. And then there was Mount Zion, God's special mountain in the city of Jerusalem. And then if you think about the New Testament times, as you got closer to the presence of the Lord, there was the courtyard for the Gentiles, which is the closest the Gentiles could get to the presence of God. And then there was the courtyard of the women, and then the courtyard of the men. And then there was the temple courtyard itself that only the priests and the Levites could be in. And then there was the temple building, the sanctuary itself, that only a certain priest could go in at specified times of the day. And then there was the Holy of Holies that only the high priest could enter only one day during the year. And what's all that telling us? It's telling us that the closer you get to God, the more holy it is, the more special it is, the more restrictive the access is. You can't just get all that close to God willy-nilly. There's a lot of decorum that's necessary. Now, you might think about if you were trying to be with some very important figure in the world, that there would be certain standards. There'd be maybe certain standards of hygiene, of dress, of decorum, of manners, of etiquette, of how you address them and things like that. And, you know, I think you could say this, that when you understand who can dwell with God, you can understand better what God's character is like, what really matters to God. Some things are very important to God that may not have been very important to us. And there may be some things that we really think are important that God's not concerned about. You know, you think about what God could have said to this. You go back to Psalm 15, and you think about the question, O Lord, who may abide in your tent? Who may dwell on your holy hill, what would we have said? You know, would we have thought, well, are there certain magic words? You know, to come into the presence of some things and to open some things, you have to have the right words that you recite. Is there some formula that you have to say? Or is there some kind of an offering that you have to bring, some kind of a sacrifice that it takes? Is there some kind of physical preparation you have to undergo? There would be for a lot of entrance into the presence of someone or entrance into some place. A lot of religions would require certain clothing or other kind of physical preparation. Do you have to have a certain attendance records at the festivals? What kind of things do you need to be in the presence of God? Now, what we're going to see here as he answers the question is it's going to sort of paint a portrait of the kind of a person that can get close to God. This is really going to be a way for us to define who's the righteous man. Who is the man that God approves of? What is God's character like? What does he consider important? And this is a pretty succinct statement here. This is a 5-verse psalm. And what he does is he gives a series of 10 conditions for being in God's presence. Three positive, three negative, two positive, two negative. So we're kind of balanced through this. Look at verse 2. He who walks with integrity and works righteousness and speaks truth in his heart. Walks with integrity. Here's a man whose lifestyle is blameless, is upright. He's got good character. He does the right things, and he sort of defines walking with integrity in terms of these next two things. He works righteousness. He does the right thing. Now, to work righteousness means he's got the right standard. He follows God's standards of what's right, and he has the self-discipline to do the right thing. Being right with God is a matter of walking and living righteously. You might look back to 14:4, do all the workers of wickedness not know? You've got workers of wickedness, but the one who dwells with God is the one who works righteously, the one who does what's right. Sometimes that's just a matter of deciding that's the way we're going to live. How many of us can think about things in our life and we'd say, that wasn't right. I didn't work righteously there. We want to do the right thing to be able to dwell with God, and speaks truth in his heart. Truth is pretty much devalued in our society. You know, it's just like, it's kind of more what works than what's true. You know, what will accomplish my goals? What will be able to persuade other people? What will cover my myself and keep me from suffering bad consequences? But God is a God of truth. He's very, very concerned about truth. You recognize Satan is the founder of lying. He's a liar from the beginning, and the truth is not in him. So it's very important to the Lord that this one who dwells with him speaks truth in his heart. Now, I think the idea of speaking truth in your heart is that your heart and your lips have to line up. The truth has to be what we have in our heart and what we speak. You think about this. Lies don't just happen. I lie because I decided to not be honest. Maybe even not with myself, and certainly not with others. So here's a man who speaks truth in his heart. And back in 12:2, they speak falsehood to one another with flattering lips, and with a double heart they speak. The liar has a double heart. He's kind of a two-minded man. He's got the truth and he's got what he says. We need to have good character in our heart that comes out of our lips, that we're always honest. We say the things that are true. There's some positive characteristics. Who can be with the Lord? He who walks with integrity and works righteousness and speaks truth in his heart. But now there are some negative qualities. Integrity has implications not just for our personal character, but also for how we treat others. So look at verse 3. He does not slander with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor takes up a reproach against his friend. So here's a man who doesn't slander with his tongue. That is, he doesn't badmouth people. He doesn't try to run them down. You know, there are times when maybe we don't like somebody. Maybe there's somebody who we feel like has treated us badly. And it's easy for us to try to poison other people against them. You know, say certain things that create suspicion maybe, or make people kind of think, I don't know about this person. You know, trying to say some things that hurt the other person's influence and acceptance. The man who can dwell with the Lord does not slander with his tongue. He doesn't run people down. He doesn't speak things that are false about others. Nor does evil to his neighbor. It's not just a matter of what we say about them. We don't do things that hurt them. James chapter 3 talks about how the same fountain doesn't pour forth sweet water and bitter. And his point is, you can't say I love God and hurt people. You know, you've got to be consistent. If we're serving the Lord, if we're loving the Lord, we treat his creatures properly. It's hard not to do evil to people when we're irritated with them. You know, we start building up a kind of resentment and frustration, bitterness, and you know, smoke starts coming out of our ears and whatever. And pretty soon we attack in some way. We do harm to them. That's not the kind of person who can dwell with God. You know, we may have kind of been thinking, you know, I intend to be with the Lord eternally. I want to be close to God. Have we thought about what it takes? You know, there are some people who will think they're close to God who are not. Luke 13 talked about that. Rather surprising to these people. In Luke 13, 25, once the head of the house gets up and shuts the door and you begin to stand outside and knock on the door saying, Lord, open up to us. Then he will answer and say to you, I do not know where you're from. Then you will begin to say, we ate and drank in your presence, and you taught in our streets. And he will say, I tell you, I do not know where you're from. Depart from me, all you evildoers. There are some people going to be surprised on the judgment day. They're going to be like, we were your people, and we were right there. And I mean, what do you mean? He's going to say, I don't even know you. There are people who think they're with God and they're dwell with God forever and God's close to them and they talk all about God. But there are standards. If I slander with my tongue or I do evil to my neighbor, I'm not the kind of person that can dwell with God. No matter how nice I am to God, he's concerned about how I treat others. He says, nor takes up a reproach against his friend. Here's a person who doesn't accept slander against others. You know, he's careful not to just give credit to everything that somebody says about someone that he knows or is friends with. He's cautious about that. Gossips would have less of a tendency to gossip if they didn't have an audience. You know, if we weren't listening to them and accepting what they said. It's not fair to have our attitude shaped by just one side of the story. So, if I want to be dwelling with the Lord, I've got to watch how I treat other people. He does not slander with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor takes up a reproach against his friend. On the other hand, look at verse 4. In whose eyes a reprobate is despised, but who honors those who fear the Lord. Now, so what he's saying in verse 3 doesn't mean someone who's just naive. Somebody who believes that everybody's wonderful and they just want to follow what anybody does. No, here's a person that has the same views that God has. He despises a reprobate, but honors those who fear the Lord. That's the way God looks at that. God despises those who are wicked. And the people who dwell with God also despise the wicked. They do not follow. They don't make their heroes people whose character is evil. We tend to glamorize and admire things that are wicked, things that are wrong. You think about the kind of people that we tend to look up to and respect. Are they righteous people? Are they people who fear the Lord? Or are we really impressed with reprobates? Sometimes we're impressed because they're so bold and brash. Or maybe they're successful. Or maybe they're doing all the things we secretly wish we could do, or whatever. Sometimes we like rebelliousness. That kind of appeals to us. But if we're the kind of person who God's going to allow to dwell with him, we are reprobates despised in our eyes too. We look at those wicked people the same way God does, and we honor those who fear the Lord. We respect the people. Now, they may not be the richest people. Or they may not be the brightest people. Or they might not be the most successful people. But if they fear the Lord, they're the people we honor and respect. You can tell a lot about somebody by who they look up to, by who they respect. And that's a part of the conditions of dwelling with God. He also says he swears to his own hurt and does not change. You understand what he's saying there? Here's a man who makes a commitment. He takes an oath. And then he realizes, oh, this is not going to turn out well for me. This is going to end up hurting me. He doesn't renege. He doesn't back out of his commitment. His honor is more important than his wallet. You think about commitments we make, oaths we take. Think about the marriage vow. There are people who get married and then wish they hadn't. You know, they think, wow. If I'd have known it was going to be like this. Well, we take a commitment like that seriously. We don't back out of it. We don't try to renege on it because, well, it didn't turn out the way I thought it would. That's a good idea before you make a commitment like that to think seriously and to take it seriously. But there are things that could happen and you did never really knew that it would. You know, we kind of blindsided. You didn't realize what this person was really like, or they changed, or circumstances changed. But if you're the kind of person who can dwell with God, you're going to stick with that. And you're going to love your mate and treat them well, even if they didn't turn out to be what you thought they'd be. And even if marriage didn't turn out to be the kind of picnic you were hoping it would be. And there are other kinds of commitments we make. There can be financial commitments or other kinds of things that we take an oath. We are solemn in our commitment. And if we make a solemn commitment to do something, then we do it. Even if it ends up hurting us. You know, we don't take out a loan, you know, take out a mortgage and then say, well, I decided, you know, I'm not going to pay this. You know, I don't really want to pay the money back, you know, and things like that. You know, because maybe it wasn't a smart idea. Maybe we wish we hadn't done it. But he says, he swears to his own hurt and does not change. And then in verse 5, there's a lot of conditions to dwelling with God. Not just anybody can. He does not put out his money at interest. Now, I think the idea is it's to not take advantage of somebody else's misfortune to our own enrichment. We don't, somebody who has to borrow from us, we don't force them to pay it back with interest. And really, we've got to examine our attitude toward money and toward people. A lot of times, we're way too concerned with what we get and what we can have and just trying to make money. And so we're willing to take advantage of people who are in need to try to enrich ourselves. The man who can dwell with God doesn't do that. What has God done toward those who are in need? He's generously given. He's not tried to take advantage of that situation for his own gain. I don't think this is talking about commercial transactions here. It seems to me like the idea of putting out money at interest throughout the Old Testament is the idea of taking advantage in a personal relationship. He also says, nor does he take a bribe against the innocent. Here's a man who's fair in his judgments, regardless of which side it would most benefit him to be on. You know, there are a lot of people who, they decide how they're going to line up based upon what they think will be better for them. The prophets were very strong about taking bribes. And throughout the Old Testament, you've got warnings about that. God doesn't discriminate against the poor in favor of the rich and the powerful, and we shouldn't either. You know, just because we think, well, you know, it's going to enrich me. It's going to benefit me to be on the side of this guy. He's got a lot more clout. I'm not the kind of guy who does anything. If I want to dwell with God, I'm not the kind of guy who does anything for my own personal benefit. God honors the just and the righteous who are fair in every situation. Now he says, he who does these things will never be shaken. And you know why? God is a stable, rooted God. And a person who does these things, who's got fellowship with God, who dwells with God, he's anchored in the rock. He's got a foundation. You know, when the storms come, And the earthquakes and whatever, he's rooted solidly in the Lord. Nothing will shake him. Here's the man who can be with God now and forever. So, not just anybody can dwell with God. It's not just, you know, because you want to. And it's worth really examining the question, who can it be? And then thinking about ourselves. Do I measure up to this? I want to be with the Lord forever. That's my intention. Am I that kind of a person? We'll reread Psalm 15 and then we'll stand and sing. O Lord, who may abide in your tent? Who may dwell on your holy hill? He who walks with integrity and works righteousness and speaks truth in his heart. He does not slander with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor takes up a reproach against his friend, in whose eyes a reprobate is despised, but who honors those who fear the Lord. He swears to his own hurt and does not change. He does not put out his money at interest, nor does he take a bribe against the innocent. He who does these things will never be shaken. Let's stand.